Welcome to God and Country Biblical Exposition. This week's program is part two about the Ukraine crisis. And I'm sure there's going to be a part 10, 15, 25. Interestingly enough, this crisis has taken all of the attention away from COVID. Whereas every night for the past 2 years, the lead story was something about COVID. Now it's all about Ukraine. I mean, who cares about a virus when we may be on the brink of World War III? And in one sense, this war in Ukraine has helped to set people's priorities straight. The left has been all concerned about made-up grievances, wokeism, transgenderism, global warming. Well, now they're having to face the realities of this world, sin and crime. Third world problems are becoming first world problems. Here's an interesting quote. What will happen in the next 100 days will determine what will take place in the next 100 years. And the point is this: if Russia begins to attack from the east, and then China attacks Taiwan, there will be a new Cold War, even a hot war. The totalitarianism of China and Russia versus Western democracies. And then the Middle East could explode while other nations are busy defending their borders. To quote the Russian foreign minister, the next world war will be a nuclear war. And as I mentioned last week, I'm not predicting World War III. No man knows the time or the hour of the coming of the Lord or the apocalypse. But every major world conflict started with these little skirmishes that people at the time thought would amount to nothing. It's the 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 3 principle. While they're saying peace and safety, then destruction will come upon them suddenly, like labor pains upon a woman with child, and they will not escape. Or, no one says it much better than the prophet Isaiah, Isaiah chapter 47, verse 11. But evil will come upon you, which you will not know how to charm away. And disaster will fall on you, for which you cannot atone. And destruction about which you do not know will come upon you suddenly. So here's an interesting article. Texas pastor says, I'm 99% sure that Russia is not invading Ukraine. He said this back at the beginning of February. Well, he's probably glad he didn't say he was 100% sure, because if you say you're 99% sure, you always have an out. Quote from this pastor, the new religion that we're living in this day and age, is politics. They get their power when we give them attention. The beautiful thing is that when you say yes to Jesus Christ, you enter into a new kingdom. I will be prophetic with you. I am 99% sure that Russia is not invading Ukraine right now. I'm not trying to be political, but this is where fear of invasion and all this stuff is trying to get people emotional. Once you see media outlets starting to do really emotional things, be careful. Conspiracy theories are becoming an issue for churches. Evangelical pastors are seeing the far-right radicalizations of their congregations. With more people relying on social media for their news, where fake news and conspiracy theories are rife. So we can see that this pastor is trying to warn his people not to be too political. But there's a ditch on both sides of this road, being too politically minded and not being politically minded enough. God would have us to understand the signs of the time. And be aware when evil arises in this world. Proverbs 22:3, the prudent sees the evil and hides himself, but the naive go on and are punished for it. I mean, the Christian should know when the Hitlers and the Stalins arrive and when it's time to get out of Dodge. Case in point, the early New Testament church followed the prophecy of Luke 21. When they saw the Roman armies coming against Israel, the believers knew that it was time to escape. Luke chapter 21, when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then recognize that her desolation is near. Then those who are in Judea must flee to the mountains. So, following the news to discern the signs of the times is a spiritual endeavor. Plus, with all of this talk about Russian aggression, it opens up great witnessing opportunities. I mean, if you know how to move the conversation over to biblical prophecy and to Christ. I was just in a conversation with some neighbors, and I explained to them how the Bible says that someday an apocalypse is coming, and the biblical book of the Revelation says that someday someone will go forth conquering and to conquer, and peace will be taken from the earth, and a fourth of the earth's population will be wiped out. Revelation chapter 6. Well, their ears were open to hear the word of God. Well, my point is this. Be wise, be ready, for the Lord is coming in a day when we think he is not coming. Matthew 24:44. Here's another article in this regard. Not a pastor, but a CIA senior official, Dan Hoffman, who did not expect Putin to invade Ukraine. Quote, "The profile of Vladimir Putin from today is not the one that we would have written 2 weeks ago or 2 years ago. And so if we thought about Vladimir Putin as a coldly calculated chess player, which I frankly thought he was, and I thought he was going to extort a deal out of us and never go to war against Ukraine because it would be too prohibitively costly in terms of spilled blood, but that is not the guy we're dealing with now. So it's almost like we've seen a transition from a chess player to a poker player." Unquote CIA officer Dan Hoffman. And 4 weeks ago, if you were to ask me what I thought Russia was going to do, I would have said Putin is going to take the two Russian-speaking provinces in the east and only threaten to invade Ukraine to get the West to make some concessions regarding some issues affecting Russia. But my mistake was in thinking that evil is logical, and it's not. The desire for power and for war blinds the logic. It even blinds basic self-preservation. So there's no telling what's going to transpire over the next few weeks. NATO has just given the green light for Poland to give all of its Soviet MiGs to the Ukrainian army, but the United States shut that down. Nevertheless, the United States is shipping tons of military material over to Ukraine, and that's going to provoke the Russians. The Russians have already declared that U.S. sanctions against Russia are an act of war. If Putin is your typical madman, like Hitler, Mussolini, Stalin, Mao, Saddam, don't underestimate his willingness to push the nuclear button if he gets backed into a corner. The fear of mutually assured destruction is not much of a deterrent to totalitarian dictators. So this is why Biden wants to keep importing 400,000 barrels of Russian oil into the United States every day. But his own party was complaining that Biden was funding both sides of the war, funding the Russian army with oil money at the same time spending $350 million on new military aid for Ukraine. This was because Biden's advisors were warning Biden that if he's too tough on Putin, he'll push Putin into a corner and the war will get escalated. Biden, by not acting proactively, put himself into a no-win situation. By delaying sending arms to Ukraine, and by telling the Russians in advance that the U.S. was not going to send troops. The threat of U.S. intervention could have stopped Putin, but now that Putin has already made his move, Putin cannot back down and still save face. So the reason for this conflict is Biden's short-sighted appeasement foreign policy. And that's a topic I'd like to discuss. And what the Bible study is for this week's program, foreign policy, how ungodly leaders always fail at foreign policy. Last year, in October of 2021, right after Biden had his embarrassing pullout from Afghanistan, the former Secretary of Defense in the Obama administration, Robert Gates, said Biden has been wrong in every major foreign policy decision in the last four decades. Gates was being interviewed on CBS's 60 Minutes, and Anderson Cooper was asking Gates about his 2014 biography, Duty, Memoirs of a Secretary at War. And in that book, written 7 years earlier, even before Biden was campaigning to be president, Gates wrote, Biden has been wrong on nearly every major foreign policy and national security issue over the past four decades. Now, we have to appreciate who Robert Gates is. This comment wasn't simply political gamesmanship. Gates served as Secretary of Defense under Bush and Obama, 26 years in the CIA. He became the director of the CIA, and he's the president of Texas A&M University. His resume goes on. It's quite impressive. And if you look into every major foreign policy position Biden has taken since he started serving in the Senate back in 1973 and during his 8 years as vice president, in retrospect, it has been proven that Biden has been wrong about every foreign policy decision, from Vietnam to the war in Iraq, to the 9/11 response, to Afghanistan, and now this issue in Ukraine. And remember the political story back in 2020? That President Obama told an insider, don't underestimate Joe Biden's ability to F things up. But it's not just Biden who has gotten foreign policy wrong, even Obama himself. Remember in the presidential debates between Mitt Romney and Barack Obama? Mitt Romney was asked, what is the greatest threat to America today? And Mitt Romney said, Russia. And everyone laughed. And Obama came back at him with that memorable line, the 1980s is calling and wants their foreign policy back. Meaning the Russian threat was something back in the 1980s, but now we don't have to worry about Russia. And Putin's no threat. Well, here's that clip.
Governor Romney, I'm glad that you recognize that Al-Qaeda is a threat. Because a few months ago, when you were asked what's the biggest geopolitical threat facing America, you said Russia. Not Al-Qaeda. You said Russia. In the 1980s are now calling to ask for their foreign policy back because, you know, the Cold War has been over for 20 years. But, Governor, you know, when it comes to our foreign policy, you seem to want to import the foreign policies of the 1980s. Just like the social policies of the 1950s and the economic policies of the 1920s.
So guess who's having the last laugh? Mitt Romney and all those who are warning that Russia is a growing threat. Here's another flashback video. President Trump is at a round table talking with European leaders, and he warns them that the German gas and oil deal with Russia is a bad move, because it will strengthen the enemy, Russia.
Well, I have to say, I think it's very sad when Germany makes a massive oil and gas deal with Russia, where you're supposed to be guarding against Russia, and Germany goes out and pays billions and billions of dollars a year to Russia. So we're protecting Germany, we're protecting France, we're protecting all of these countries, and then numerous of the countries go out and make a pipeline deal with Russia, where they're paying billions of dollars into the coffers of Russia. So we're supposed to protect you against Russia, but they're paying billions of dollars to Russia, and I think that's very inappropriate. And the former chancellor of Germany is the head of the pipeline company that's supplying the gas. Ultimately, Germany will have almost 70% of their country controlled by Russia with natural gas. So you tell me, is that appropriate? I mean, I've been complaining about this from the time I got in. It should have never been allowed to have happened. But Germany is totally controlled by Russia because they will be getting from 60 to 70% of their energy from Russia and a new pipeline. And you tell me if that's appropriate, because I think it's not. And I think it's a very bad thing for NATO, and I don't think it should have happened. And I think we have to talk to Germany about it.
So I told you so just doesn't say it enough. Check this article out. This looks like the Russian collusion that should have been looked into. See, while our foolish, power-hungry politicians were trying to take down President Trump with a made-up collusion story every night in the media for 3 years, the real collusion with Russia was going unnoticed. Europe colluding with Russian energy and Russia spreading environmental lies in Europe to get Western Europe to shut down energy production. Here's a tweet within the article. People think Europe depends on Russia for energy because it lacks its own. But 15 years ago, Europe exported more natural gas than Russia does today. Now Russia exports three times more gas than the Europeans produce. Why? Because climate activists, partly funded by Russia, blocked fracking in Western Europe. And remember, 2 years ago, environmentalists convinced the German government to shut down all nuclear power plants. They actually have a party in Germany called the Green Party. Olaf Scholz, the new prime minister who replaced Merkel, now wants to keep Germany's last three nuclear power plants open. You think that'd be a good idea? Well, the point of this article is that American politicians on the left could not and would not see the real problem with Russia because they were pursuing a lie for political personal gain. Hence, their punishment was missing the real threat and making fatal foreign policy decisions. Proverbs chapter 1, verse 31, "So they shall eat the fruit of their own way and be satiated with their own devices, for the waywardness of the naive will kill them, and the complacencies of fools will destroy them." So why is this? Why has Biden gotten foreign policy wrong at every turn? And someone like Donald Trump, with no political experience, understood the real threat and took action? Well, it's because of worldview. How Biden and the left view the world versus how the right views the world. I mean, these days we talk about worldview all the time in the church. And what we mean by worldview is what one believes about man, about man's nature, about God's morality, about the purpose of life. And the decisions we make are all based upon our worldview. What's most important in life? For example, if you believe that people are basically good and that they're just misinformed when they do crimes, you will make totally different policy decisions than if you believe man is basically evil and that man has to be constrained by force and the fear of punishment. If you believe global warming is the greatest existential threat to humanity in the 21st century, you will make policy decisions that are totally different from those who believe human sin is the existential threat to humanity in the 21st century. And it's because Joe Biden has a wrong worldview, a leftist view of man, and a leftist view of the real problems and solutions in this world. That's why he's wrong on every single foreign policy decision. Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State under Trump, said in an interview on Fox last week, now this is kind of lengthy but important, so hang in there. He said, "Russian President Vladimir Putin has always had a dream of a greater Russia. That hasn't changed. That has been constant since he has been in charge in Russia. What has changed has been American leadership. Under the Trump administration, there was a deep understanding that we were going to put America first, and we were prepared to protect the things that matter to us. And when someone crossed that, when someone did something that risked an American life or put our economy at risk, we responded. But when you're weak, when you allow the debacle in Afghanistan to result in the death of 13 Americans, this is precisely what bad guys will see. I'm really worried. I'm worried about a cascading set of calamities around the world. I'm confident the Ukrainian people will fight, but we could have Xi Jinping see a weakness. We could have Chairman Kim see a weakness. The Russian invasion of Ukraine could lead to a world war. As for sanctions, the sanctions the Biden administration has imposed upon Russia, they won't be strong enough to deter what's happening there this afternoon or tomorrow. Well, then Pompeo went on to urge the Biden administration to rescind all of their rulings against U.S. oil production and start sending oil and gas around the world. Quote, we are, by shutting down American energy, we are fueling a communist invasion. We should take away the resources from Russia just like we did the Iranians and the Chinese during our time in office. Those are the kind of things that change the calculus for thugs like Vladimir Putin. The United States is the greatest nation in the history of civilization. We should act that way, not with arrogance and hubris, but with dynamic, humble power that speaks with moral clarity about our Judeo-Christian tradition and the country that we are. When we do that, other countries will want to be our friend. Allied nations will want to partner with us and trade with us, and our adversaries will behave in ways that are more normative and less ruthless. As for Russia and China, neither of them give a whip stitch about human life. And both have grand intentions for building the greatness of their own nations. They have things they disagree on, but for the moment, they're going to find common cause. The most important difference between the Trump administration and the Biden administration is that we were fearless about protecting America everywhere in the world. We wanted religious freedom to be one of the things we worked on deeply. The Biden administration has chosen to lead with climate change. When you put climate change at the top of your agenda, when the conversation isn't about power, but about carbon footprint, the world thinks of you in a deeply different way. I sadly think that the change in priorities and the lack of focus on America first has driven Vladimir Putin to think he had this opportunity. Unquote, former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, a genuinely Christian man. So notice the different worldviews that make for a different foreign policy. Ultimately, it's the difference between worshiping the environment or worshiping Jehovah God. And notice all of the recent foolish policy priorities of the left. To the neglect of the real problems in the world, let me list at least 10 to get us thinking. Number one, while Russia is attacking the West, the Biden administration is trying to work out a nuclear arms development deal with Iran. Iran is Russia's ally. Iran is not going to keep any deal, and any deal will only fund and greenlight Iran's nuclear program. Number two, last week, while Russia is attacking Ukraine, the Democrats brought up for a vote in the Senate legislation making Roe versus Wade the law of the land. It passed the House. The president was planning to sign it, and providentially it failed in the Senate by just 2 votes. So the very immorality that is bringing the curse of war down upon the West, the left wants to codify it in a time of war. Number three, this article. While the Russian army is invading the West, in February, our military conducted gender pronoun training for our troops. This is the priority of the sexually deviant. And then back in February, the Defense Department put out this important policy statement. Diversity, equity, inclusion are necessities in the U.S. military. Number four, while the West is engaging in war, Congress is working on passing another huge deficit spending bill. Quote, this legislation includes what Democrats have lauded as the biggest increase to non-defense discretionary spending in 4 years. They just cannot stop their greedy spending, the printing of money. And even though this is creating inflation and destroying the credibility of American currency as the world currency, they don't see that their deficit spending and the devaluating of the American currency is part of what's provoking Russia and China. Number five, how about this story? While the world is at war, Democrat legislators in Virginia are proposing legislation to designate March the 10th as Abortion Provider Appreciation Day. It reminds me so much of the story of Ahab and Jezebel. Their kingdom is coming apart, and all Jezebel can do and think about is promoting Baal worship and persecuting the prophets of Jehovah. Story number six, CBS had to put a transgender spin on the Russian invasion, that there is a Ukrainian war in a war against transgenders, and that Ukraine is not a rainbow-friendly place. And while this war is going on, Vice President Kamala Harris is pushing for the LGBTQ equality bill to be passed in Congress. Now, a few months ago, the Democrat administration, seeking to be relevant, allowed a very popular homosexual media idol to be a White House intern for the day. Here's that video.
Hi, my name is Cooper, and this is a day in my life as a White House intern.
We did it, Joe.
Hey, Jenny. I booked you a nail appointment, love.
Yeah, I didn't tell you to do that.
It's called initiative.
Is Olivia Rodrigo still here?
No. We've come a long way in our fight against this virus. We've vaccinated 160 million Americans. Are you getting this all down?
Don't worry, Queen. It's all right here.
So can you imagine the Trump administration allowing for this kind of deviance in the White House? Could you imagine Putin having this in the Kremlin? Story number nine, John Kerry, who Biden appointed to be the United States climate change envoy, as if that's a necessary position. He's out there complaining that the war in Ukraine will interfere with the bigger priority, climate change. Story number 10. Biden asked China to persuade Russia not to invade, and then China handed over to the Russians the intelligence we knew about the Russian plans. But remember, during the campaign, Biden promised to bring order to this world, and on his campaign website, he put forth the Biden plan for leading the democratic world to meet the changes in the 21st century. Yet, his president has been and will continue to be one long, slow train wreck because failed foreign and domestic policy is endemic to leftism. But regardless of this disaster, the left doesn't see it. Joe Biden said in a speech this week that Trump brought 4 years of chaos to the United States and her husband is the right person for this moment in history. And White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said this week, well, I think you know another reason why the American people are so grateful. The majority of the American people are grateful that President Biden has not taken a page out of his predecessor's playbook, Trump, as it relates to global engagement and global leadership. Well, let's get to some Bible study. The Old Testament records that in the fall of ancient Israel, it was due to her national sins, but it was occasioned by foreign policy blunders. Most Bible readers, new Bible readers, miss this lesson. There are passages such as Jeremiah chapter 2, verse 18, what are you doing on the road to Egypt? Or Isaiah chapter 30, verse 2, who proceed down to Egypt without consulting me, to take refuge in the safety of Pharaoh and to seek shelter in the shadow of Egypt. Or Jeremiah 2:36, why do you go around so much changing your way? Also, you will be put to shame by Egypt as you are put to shame by Assyria. Or Hosea chapter 7, verse 11, so Ephraim has become like a silly dove without sense. They call to Egypt, they go to Assyria. Isaiah 19:11, the princes of Zoan are mere fools. the advice of Pharaoh's wisest advisors has become stupid. So what are these texts all about? Well, the prophets of God were rebuking the national leaders of Israel for their foolish foreign policy, which included, among other mistakes, making wrong alliances with Egypt and Assyria. So recognize that the emphasis of Scripture is that Israel's defeat came through the occasion of Israel's foolish foreign policy. Now, God could have made the occasion the strengthening of the enemy, or the failure of Israel to build defenses, or some other economic or social factor, but the occasion of Israel's defeat was stupid foreign policy. And it was by their foreign policy that they enticed and provoked the enemy. And it wasn't simply that Israel wasn't hawkish enough, but Israel would go to war when she shouldn't go to war, and Israel would not go to war when she should go to war. The answer was not a one-size-fit-all policy, but a righteous discernment for each situation. And it was always the ungodly kings who, by following the immorality and the ideology of paganism, they were the ones who implemented disastrous foreign policy, just like in our day. In the providence of God, it's going to be the pro-abortion, pro-transgender, pro-LGBT, pro-humanist that will make foolish choices to destroy our nation. Why? Because in practice, the ungodly have a wrong worldview. Some examples: Jehoshaphat in the southern kingdom, he makes an alliance with Ahab and Jezebel in the northern kingdom to help the northern kingdom fight the Syrians. And that was a major defeat for both northern and southern Israel. The prophet came to Jehoshaphat and said, "Should you help the wicked and love those who hate the Lord? You shouldn't have made an alliance with the North because the North is evil." It reminds me of President Nixon making an economic alliance with Communist China, which enriched China. That was in 1972, when Kissinger and Nixon began the strategy of doing business with China, assuming that Western business would undermine communism and turn China into a democrat republic, whereas the strategy with Russia had been isolation. So why did America embark on this foreign policy? Well, this was Kissinger's worldview as an atheist. He didn't understand evil. He didn't understand what causes evil and what stops evil. Because for secular materialists, bad behavior is only caused by economic deprivation. And even last year, Kissinger said there's no threat of China invading Taiwan. I was 12 years old back in 1972, and I remember thinking at the time that normalizing relations with China was a bad move. We're selling out to the enemy. We're strengthening the enemy. So why would a 12-year-old kid realize this when all of these college-educated foreign policy diplomats not realize this? Well, because even though I had not yet given my life to Christ and I knew little about this world, my parents took me to church and Sunday school. And almost through osmosis, I learned what is good and what is evil and how evil needs to be handled. Plus, as far as these foreign policy experts are concerned, in the words of George Orwell, there are some things that are so absurd that only intellectuals could believe them. See, it takes a leftist education at a secular university to think as a leftist. Also, George Orwell said, it's frightful that people who are so ignorant have so much influence. Well, then in 1978, Deng Xiaoping, the leader of China, made a tour of Western nations with his team, and the West opened up to him and showed him all the industry and the wealth in the West. And Xi Jinping went back to embark on a program of making China great by turning China into a manufacturing powerhouse to compete with the West and to outproduce the West. And this is identical to what Hezekiah did when he opened up relations with Babylon and he entertained ambassadors from Babylon. 2 Kings chapter 20, verse 12, the king of Babylon sent letters and presents to Hezekiah, for he heard that Hezekiah had been sick. Hezekiah listened to them and showed them all of his treasure house, the silver and the gold and the spices and the precious oil and the house of his armor and all that was found in his treasuries. There was nothing in his house nor in all of his dominion that Hezekiah did not show them. Then Isaiah the prophet came to King Hezekiah and said to him, "What did these men say, and from where have they come?" And Hezekiah said, "Oh, they've come from a far country, from Babylon." He said, "What have they seen in your house?" So Hezekiah answered, "They have seen all that is in my house, and there's nothing among my treasures that I have not shown them." Then Isaiah said to Hezekiah, "Hear the word of the Lord. Behold, days are coming when all that is in your house and all that your fathers have laid up in store to this day will be carried to Babylon. Nothing shall be left, says the Lord." So Isaiah was foretelling the coming Babylonian invasion of Israel, all precipitated by Hezekiah's prideful foreign policy. Another example, King Ahaz paid off the empire of Assyria to help him defeat the Arameans, 2 Chronicles chapter 28, verse 20. So Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria, came against him and afflicted him instead of strengthening him. Although Ahaz took a portion out of the house of the Lord and out of the palace of the king and of the princes and gave it to the king of Assyria, but it didn't help him. You know, it reminds me of President Obama sending pallets of cash to the Iranians to work out a nuclear deal. And in the final destruction of Israel in 586 BC, it was the final four kings of Israel who reigned over a period of 12 years who brought about the invasion of Babylon by their foolish foreign policy decisions. They would not listen to the foreign policy advice of Jeremiah, but continued to believe the lies of the false prophets who insisted that Israel should try to form an alliance with other nations to defeat Babylon. And in 70 AD, when Jerusalem was destroyed again by the Romans, it was the foolish foreign policy of the Zealots that brought the wrath of Rome down upon the nations. And when Israel and all nations are going to be destroyed in the apocalypse, it will be the foolish foreign policy of the nations in that they create a one-world government under the rule of an Antichrist leader. Revelation 3:10, this will be the hour of testing that will come upon the whole world. So the spiritual condition of our soul is demonstrated in this world by the decisions we make, who we will align ourselves with. Psalm chapter 15. The nations have sunk down in the pit which they have made. In the net which they hid, their own foot has been caught. The Lord has made himself known. He has executed judgment. In the work of his own hands, the wicked is snared. So there are some great biblical insights we can gain concerning our own day by studying, you know, the failed foreign policy of ancient Israel. But of course, our leaders today pay no attention to God and his word. But here's the bigger and more important lesson. Remember last week, I addressed what the Bible has to say about war. And I pointed out that in the Old Testament, it's all about earthly battles. The lesson God was trying to teach through these earthly wars is that when you obey God, when you're on God's side, you win. And when you disobey God, you lose. And this is all illustrated through national, corporate, victory, or defeat in battle. And that's the Old Testament. And we know from Hebrews chapter 9 that the Old Testament was symbols for the present time. It was all based on the earthly, not the heavenly. or rather the earthly promises illustrated and pointed to the greater heavenly promises. Hebrews chapter 8, verse 5, these earthly things served as a shadow or copies of heavenly things. Just like in Hebrews chapter 11, the promise to Abraham was a piece of real estate in the Middle East, but it was really pointing to the promise of a heavenly city whose builder and maker is God. So all of these Old Testament accounts of war were just to teach the spiritual lesson that you win with God. And as I mentioned last week, in the New Testament, there are no accounts of earthly battles. The real battle is the focus, the battle between the kingdom of God and the kingdom of Satan. That's the real war that's waging. And we need to be winning, be on the winning side in that battle. Well, in the same way, in the New Testament, there is no talk about national foreign policy like in the Old Testament. Even though some of our current leaders need to learn from the Old Testament some principles of foreign policy in their work in government, but the focus of the New Testament is the more important foreign policy decision. Whether you and I will make our alliance with Christ and his kingdom rather than with Satan and the kingdoms of this world. Whether we will make peace or detente with God through Christ. 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 18. Now all these things are from God, who reconciled us to himself through Christ and has given us the ministry of reconciliation. Namely, that God was in Christ reconciling the world to himself, not counting their trespasses against them, and he has committed to us the word of reconciliation. Therefore, we are ambassadors for Christ. And that is a very political term. As though God were making an appeal through us, we beg you on behalf of Christ, be reconciled to God, not to Egypt, not to Rome, not to Assyria. Romans chapter 5, we have made ourselves the enemies of God, and we need to be reconciled back to God. 2 Corinthians 5:21, he made him who knew no sin to be sin on our behalf, so that we might become the righteousness of God in him. And that text takes on a whole new meaning if we see it in the light of these Old Testament examples of alliances with pagan nations rather than an alliance with Jehovah God. Now, all this might seem like a stretch where, you know, some preacher says, listen, just like America is negotiating peace with such and such, we need to make peace with God, or the real treaty that needs to be made with God. But it's not a stretch. It's the exact illustration we are given in the Old Testament, and it's the application in the New Testament. In the Old Testament, it was all about foreign policy between nations. In the New Testament, it deals with the greater issue, making peace with God, being allied with God through Christ. And the nations of this world are making all sorts of foreign policy blunders, which will eventually lead to the apocalypse. But don't make that supreme foreign policy blunder in your own personal life. Come over to God's side. I noticed this week that the Ukrainian government put out an offer that if you join them in fighting the Russians, they will grant you Ukrainian citizenship. And if you come over to God's side in his fight against Satan, this world, and the flesh, God will grant you citizenship in his kingdom. So thanks for listening. Next week, it's going to again be about Ukraine, either about why the left hates oil or a program about how this war can escalate. Don't forget to subscribe, share, like, leave a comment below, and may Jesus Christ reign.